With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Inside the Comedian with me, David Reed.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you so much. What a marvellous, marvellous honour this is.
It is an honour, and you're right to recognise it as the honour it is.
Yeah.
We keep a very tight ship. Okay. And not anyone can get on this show. It's not just about who's available, Mark.
In future interviews, when people ask the highlight,
yes,
this will be it.
So what is your earliest memory?
My earliest memory was I just about remember seeing a Zeppelin over London in 1915 would have been.
Right. You... Wow. So you would have been quite young then.
Yeah.
Just about remember it.
Yeah.
That must have been an incredible sight.
It was extraordinary. And in those days, people used to say, "Going on the Germans," and there used to be a little thing in the community. People would just go out and try and blow it away. Oh, that...
I mean, it's those traditions that are really...
We won the war in those days, you know.
Yeah, that's right. It's that sort of fighting spirit of blowing away the Zeppelins.
Yeah.
That's
of course, the Americans took all the credit.
Absolutely. They show up. They barely blow at all.
Bother.
I mean, people forget this, that we won the war by... We sluiced away the U-boats, didn't we? We all... We lined up on the beach and
everyone,
we all...
Everyone, come on.
Come on. Sluice it back.
That's how the D-Day
landings. I saw one. It's definitely down there.
That's how the D-Day landings happen.
Come on, they'll get there quicker.
They'll get there quicker.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's irritated. It's going away. That's exactly how it went. Yeah. And do you think it's these memories that are why you got into comedy?
Yeah. But largely, my first, my sort of opening into comedy, if you like, I was terrified of flying. I've always been really scared of flying, actually.
Yeah, because of the Zeppelin.
Probably, yes. There's a connection. But I once had to get a plane to Dublin, and I found that the only way that I could keep calm, really, because a slight bit of turbulence,
yes,
was I would just sort of like very nervously tell jokes. And at one point, there was quite a bad bit of turbulence, and I told a couple of jokes. And everybody started laughing, and the captain actually heard this and came out, and he said, you know, I noticed that there was a sort of, you know, people in the, his sort of mates had gone in, whoever it is, you know, the rest of the crew had gone in.
Sure. And said, you know, the captain of an airliner, if you don't know, he stands over the shoulder of the pilot and just sort of tells him what to do, doesn't he?
That's his role.
Yeah,
he does. Anyway, they were very impressed with the way that I'd calmed down the passengers, and so I was booked to do a regular 30-minute slot on the London to Dublin shuttle service.
I mean, that's a double-edged sword for you, really, isn't it? Because if you're afraid of turbulence, it's a very turbulent flight.
But yeah, that's how I started.
Wow! So you started in specifically in the air. Did you find when you had your first ground-based gig that it was difficult to adapt to?
Yeah. Because the pressure obviously makes people go a little bit light-headed, you know,
and the fear is less.
Yeah. So it's easier to get laughs. It's actually a very, very good place to start, is it?
35,000 high altitude.
Feet. You know, just any old shit.
It's why the real pros play underground clubs. Slowly work your way down.
Exactly. Once you can get laughs down there.
Oh wow! Yeah. You can get laughs anywhere.
Yeah. So that's why the worst gigs was always in coal mines.
Right, yes. Yeah. Very hard, very, very hard.
Very hard to get laughs in there.
Yes. Yes, and they also ask, why are you here, don't they? They're like, we've got quotas to reach.
We remain out of the way, please. We're trying to dig some coal here.
I mean, you've got to find your audience, they say. You've got to find your audience, but I don't think they mean you've got to break into premises of work and just try material on them. Yeah. That's not really how it works.
Well, then the next thing I did was that my dad was a diplomat.
Right.
And he was ambassador to Poland. And
British ambassador?
Yeah.
Right. I just couldn't quite place your accent, Mark. Sorry.
He was British ambassador
right,
to Poland.
Right, to Poland, yes.
Well, I don't know. He might not have been. I mean, I was only a kid. You don't take that much notice, do you? Your dad tells you what they do.
Yeah. And you go, right, that is the one job I've heard of now.
People don't know, you know. Like no. Boris Johnson's kids, they probably don't know what his dad does. And he doesn't know what they do.
No.
Quid pro quo.
Right.
So I was... and I was once taken out there. So at Christmas, I used to go out there.
Yes.
To Krakow.
Right.
And we used to do these, and my dad had to get up and do a little speech and stuff in this sort of big function. And when I was about 12, they said, we want you to say something. I thought, oh, God, I don't know what I'm going to say in Polish. And strangely, the only thing, the best thing to learn in Polish, the quickest way to learn Polish is the jokes, because just the way that the language works.
Right.
The jokes are the quickest way to learn things. So I learned two or three jokes, and I did these jokes at this big function, and they just went down a storm, and I thought,
Is it normal at diplomatic functions for them to go, the diplomat should stop, get the 12-year-old up?
Yeah, well, no, the diplomat's son gets up and says something.
That explains a lot. It's nepotism, you know, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, well, it was. This was back in the Stalinist days, of course.
Sure.
And, and that's what gave me... That was before. That what gave me the buzz, really. And that's what, you know, maybe that all came out when I was... when the turbulence happened. But
sure. It's the mixture of fear and an audience, I suppose, that sort of brings it out of you. Yeah. So what kind of child were you, Mark? Were you always fighting the system, or were you sort of a friend of the man, and that came later?
Well, I suppose it changed when I went to Oxford.
Right, yes. 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 So what were you like before Oxford? Or can you barely remember
now? I didn't know, you know, with my dad as being a diplomat and stuff, I didn't know where I was. I was, you know, it is, you're trying to find your own identity.
Yes, and it doesn't help if your parents keep going to different countries.
No.
With
no,
you.
It doesn't. Well, they'd leave me on my own quite often.
Oh, really?
And
how was that?
Well, you know, I was from the age of six. I was sort of left on my own. My dad would have to suddenly go over there and deal with some sort of big crisis because of the East-West talks, nuclear weapons, I don't know.
Sure.
And and so then I was just sort of left to fend for myself, really. But I got quite good at hunting and gathering.
Sure. In a domestic context or in a woods out back?
Oh, no, out the woods and everything.
Right.
I've got, you know, rested many times for gathering over the correct quota of berries.
It's interesting that they crack down on the gathering and not the hunting.
No, they're fine. I was brought up in Kent. Do you think they give a shit about hunting?
No, you're right.
Put in prison for not organising illegal dog fights.
So you went from that to from fending for yourself in a sort of survivalist Home Alone movie, as far as I can tell, to Oxford. What did you study at Oxford?
Trigonometry.
Was that your natural calling, trigonometry?
Yes.
What were your three favourite things about it?
I liked the angles.
Yes, the angles.
I liked the tangents.
Yes, the tangents.
And
yes.
I liked the cosines.
The cosines, yes. Yes. So you fell into comedy at university, did you? You didn't.
Well, no. I'd started already at the Institute in Krakow.
Of course.
But then came the aeroplane thing.
The aeroplane thing, yes.
And then
so you already had some experience under your belt by the time.
But then once you're at Oxford, you just get chatting to people, and they say, "Would you like to come and join the Oxbridge the Oxbridge Footlights?"
Yes, they do say that. They say we're doing it joint this year.
And yeah.
And then they
hand, they did you, used to.
They hand you a TV series, as far as I'm aware.
That's right, yeah. So that's yes. how I came to do that, you know, the thing I'm sure you're aware of that me and Stephen Fry did.
That's right, yes. And yes, that Stephen Fry denied at the time, but has since evidence has come out that you did do it.
Yeah.
That thing that you did.
Yes.
But there was also the TV show.
Well, they
show.
wanted a programme that was part comedy and part carpentry.
Yes.
And, yeah, we just sort of seemed to fit, really.
Yes. Did you do most of the carpentry?
Mm. Work class Kent background, wasn't I? You know, enough to sure. tell me about dovetail joints, especially the sort of trigonometry angles.
Absolutely. Trigonometry comes in very handy with your dovetail joint.
Is it angles?
It's mostly angles. It's mostly angles. Occasional straight bit.
The trigonometry lecturers. Boy, you've done a straight bit. It's meant to be angles. Come here.
This better be going to an angle soon, or I am going to get furious. Yes.
Bend over at an angle of 47 degrees.
And so, but you're, we've touched upon it briefly, your diplomatic background. Your family background's quite interesting, isn't it? Because there was a rocky road, can I say? Not the dessert. There was difficult times on the path towards becoming Mark Stewart.
You know, it's very difficult when you're... Yes. you're Dad's in such a sort of an esteemed position.
Yes. When you're such a figure of the establishment.
The Queen used to come round on a Monday.
To your working class house in Kent.
Yeah. She'd come round and she'd discuss sort of all Polish things. She'd speak perfect Polish, the Queen.
Really?
And I didn't know what they were on about. I thought she was talking about me. So that obviously led to many, many sessions with a therapist in later years.
Of course.
Which is, turned out that it was called Regal Paranoia Syndrome.
Yes, it's very common. Wherever the Queen goes,
you think the Queen is talking about you. Yeah.
But because the Queen, Her Majesty the Queen, speaks so many different languages, it's a very common syndrome, actually, because wherever she goes, she'll talk in another language, whether the person she's talking to speaks it or not.
Yeah.
Just to show off, really, isn't it?
And Queen.
Who knows what
Polish.
She's talking about? That's right.
Stand there. Every man needs to come round.
Did you have therapy for anything else, or was it just having met the Queen as a child?
I became addicted to collecting zebras.
Now, I don't know a lot about that, but I could imagine that's prohibitively expensive.
Well, yeah.
Could you keep up the habit, or did you get into financial difficulties?
Luckily, my dad, being a diplomat, was in touch with various politicians, and there was one that had an Africa room.
Right. Now, I've not heard of that. What is that?
Well, I was never allowed to know who it was, but I had it on good authority that one of them actually had an Africa room.
I mean, that sounds hugely distasteful.
And then he had zebras. They kept breeding. There was a surplus of them, so they
just locked the door of the Africa room. Leave them to it.
Yeah. Oh, Christ, the racket. Zebras. They put foxes in the shade. What a noise. Oh.
But that's it. If you just leave zebras in a confined space, they will just breed until they fill it. That is, and I mean every inch of it. They're famous for it with their tessellating patterns. I don't think they tessellate. That we'll have to ask a trigonometry expert. We don't know that.
If you'd like to see the next series of Inside the Comedian recorded live, then we have a monthly residency at King's Place Theatre in London. For full details, go to mrdavidreed.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You found... We'll get back to comedy, okay. If that's all right with you. You found a way to laugh about things, which I think is wonderful. So what was your first stand-up gig that you really remember thinking, I am good at this? Have you thought that? Sorry,
no,
I don't want to jump the gun.
Don't really. Well, my first gig was at the very first comedy store that was opened in 1925.
Yes. Yes.
And it was during the general strike.
That's right.
And,
people needed a laugh.
Yeah, yeah. And I was given union dispensation to do the gig, and I was a lion tamer.
Right, yes. It was more variety back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
people
I used to try and make the lion laugh, and that would calm him down.
Yes.
And then he wouldn't be so prone to sort of eating members of the audience.
Wouldn't be so prone. Wasn't completely turned off the idea, but, you know.
Danger is danger. What's part. Right.
It's what the comedy store was famous for back in the day.
But the old comedy physical store, peril. You remember, you know, yes. People will remember, the old comedy store, you went up in a lift.
Right.
Audience, performers, everyone had to go up in a lift.
To a very high altitude.
My lion got stuck one week in the lift. He was, we just had to leave him there for 6 weeks without food till he got thin enough to be able to walk out.
God, that's a tragic story. Was the lion all right in the end? Was he fine? I mean, lions are vaguely wedge-shaped anyway. They've got a thin back end and a lot of fur
up
the top.
You've got to remember, I had him at home when I had a house full of zebras. He was eating them all day. Thing was bloody huge, wasn't he?
Huge. Huge. I mean, I'm glad he got the help he needed.
Luckily, he went on a Lion Atkins diet.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
It was big back in the 20s when that story was set.
Yeah.
So your act is often very political. For my listeners who don't own a radio or watch reruns on Dave, what is your political sort of position? Would you say?
Perpetual infuriation with everybody.
Yes. Yes, that's very popular at the moment. There's a lot of you about. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I've got this idea for a game show.
Right. Pitch it to me.
Right. I think this is fascinating. So you think of someone like, for example, George Osborne.
Okay.
Right. And then what is that person? Are they a cunt or a wanker?
Ooh. And what do you win?
I think that is fascinating when you think about it, because it's that you end up with people having immense arguments. I've sort of seen whole pubs descend into great debates over this.
And what's your belief on Osborne? What's the final word?
Well, it's tricky. I'd wanker, I think. What do we think here?
Yeah, that's about 50-50.
And then very, very occasionally, you come up with someone who is both, and that is... So,
that's your Christmas episode.
That's your Christmas episode. So, what do you reckon on this? I reckon this person might be both. Ready? Noel Edmonds.
Oh, yeah, but I can tell you there's a buzz in the room about this format. I think Pointless better be careful. This might be...
I'd like to get old Robert Robinson if he was still around. Well, it's Radio 4, it's 6:30. Once again, it's time for Cunt or Wanker. Bing! Who do we have up next?
He'd have to have the little bell. He'd have to have the little bell. It would come round sort of on a... You know, the work experience would be cranking the little turning cardboard tube around the back. I think that's got legs.
Mm.
We should talk more after this. So when you craft your political material...
Oh, I don't craft anything.
No, okay. When you get drunk and turn on a tape recorder, How long does that process take? And how long will you then use that material?
9 minutes.
9 minutes?
Yeah. Okay. I'll just say whatever comes out in the ninth minute.
Right.
And that's...
That's always gold, is it?
That's... Well, no, it might be awful, but that's the show. That's the rule.
Right.
You've got to be very, very strict with the 9 minute rule.
Sure, sure. If it's working, don't change it.
Yeah,
don't
if someone comes in, that's why whole bits of your show might be, I don't know where I put the fucking keys.
Just like, this is very good, isn't it? I don't understand what he's doing, but it's almost like theatre.
Yeah, of course I fed the cat. Of course I fed the cat. He's still alive.
It's like Beckett, this, isn't it?
I had zebras when I was younger. I know how to keep animals.
And so
and then
you...
there'll be a bit about Emily Thornberry.
It sounds like a great show. I mean, it's structured very well. It's got some strong opinions stated in a hyperbolic way, and then a message at the end.
There's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
That's right. That's a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's all you need. Yeah. You need to be born, you need to do something, and then you need to fuck off. Yeah. That's how you have a narrative through your life.
You could get people paying £1,000 an hour for that sort of thing. They would come and they go, playwright.
I'm too clever, you see. I released this as a podcast for free. So has laughter changed, do you think, in your time? Because you've been a comedian for how long now? You were first gigging...
Well, since the 20s.
Since the 20s. So not even a year.
Oh, yeah.
So has laughter changed in that time, do you think?
Well, it used to be much louder, of course, in the old days.
Yes.
I think all the old comics will agree with this. It used to be much, much the laughter because more people worked in industry, more people worked down the pits and on the dock, in shipyards, people were used to shout.
So they were all deaf?
They were all, yeah.
They were stone deaf.
But the laughter was louder and raspier because people had, you know, asbestos illnesses and all sorts of things.
Yeah, they all died in their 40s. But
if you get a lot of... Now you get a little polite metropolitan remainy fucking laughs.
Yes.
They're no good to her.
Yeah, it's true. So you don't think that maybe laughter has been weaponized by the Russians?
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
They've got little laughter bots, haven't they?
Yes,
Putin
they have.
Putin has loads of them.
Yes. And to do down our morale.
Yeah.
Get us confused about what's funny.
He's influencing our comedy clubs, definitely.
Yes. You
know, they have lots. So that's why...
He's always at the back.
Sometimes a gig will be sold out, but there'll be 8 or 9 empty seats, and that's because they're just Russian bots.
Yes.
That are just sort of being... They're members of the audience, but they're being directed from St. Petersburg, and they're just...
That's right. Do you think these
they
bots...
They laugh at certain things that make the comic think, oh, that went well, and it was something that was maybe slightly critical of Matt Hancock, you know, and as a result of that...
It's nudging, isn't it? It's all nudging.
Yeah, it's all
Do you think these Russian bots will ever have physical form and we'll go to a comedy club and there will be 8 or 9 robots on the front row?
Oh, God, yeah, that's possible.
You know, eventually.
That's possible. And they'll be really sophisticated because they'll have studied our comedy
work. Oh, yeah.
And they'll make sure that one of the robots doesn't fucking laugh all night.
Yes. But I will say this for the robots. They will get more references than the average audience at one of those gigs will get. Because they've been trained.
They'll get, they get really, really obscure references about, you know, 14th century Wallachian history.
Yes. We don't remember that issue of Smash Hits magazine.
Yeah. Yes. That's how you know. That's one of the Putin's digital people.
Yeah. There's a few in tonight, actually. A few more than I would have liked, but there's a few. So what is left on Mark Steele's bucket list?
Well, some people might know. So I do a radio series that I've been doing for about 10 years now.
Yes.
Where each week, each year I do a sort of series of shows and it's where I travel to a different planet.
Yes. You've so far managed Earth.
Yeah, and then I have to do a show about that planet.
Yes.
To people on that planet.
Right, so how has that gone so far? You say it's been going for 10 years.
Yep.
That's how long it takes to get to Mars.
Yes.
You should be leaving, Mark. I think you're not going to... You're not going to make it on time.
It doesn't take 10 years to
get
to
not?
Mars. It takes a year and a half of one of our Earth years to get to Mars.
Right, a year and a half.
So it is a long-term project. But while I'm there, while on the way, I can do all the research, and then I have to do the shows to people on that, to people on that planet.
And how successful is that? Do you feel...
Well, it's, you know, this, we're doing the, another series. And
so which planet do you really want to go to on this?
Well, now this is why, you see, Pluto is controversial because yes. it's been downgraded. It's no longer considered a planet.
So has that really thrown your series into off balance?
Yeah, because that was going to be where we were going to go in the next series.
Right.
Now we've got to find a planet in another distant galaxy.
I mean, that's gonna put your budget up considerably.
Yeah, but
isn't
the BBC's own fault. You know, because they were in on it. It's all part, you're not supposed to know this, but they were all in on the astronomical decision to downgrade Pluto and just make it into an asteroid.
It doesn't surprise me.
What are you going to do?
The bloody BBC.
No.
Doing down planets left, right and centre.
Yeah.
It's not why I pay my licence fee.
It's Emily Maitlis's influence.
She's just got it in for the planets. So what Otherwise. Sort of material would you do for Plutonians?
Well, I don't know. You have to find out. You know, you have to find every week we go to different planets.
Yes.
And then have to find out. Know what? So you have to do stuff about the rock formations, and sometimes people in that planet find strange things very, very funny. You know, well,
if you
like
live
the
on
amount
it,
of ice that there is on the west side of the planet,
yes,
or something.
Of course, it's going to be mostly geological features based, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know.
Have you ever got into scrapes making perhaps a joke that's too risque for the local crowd?
Yes, we
insulting to, we of their local culture.
Yeah. Well, Venus, we had to go straight back to the rocket and just head straight off because they just didn't, you know, we were doing stuff about the cloud formations and they just, I don't know, we got some of it wrong.
I mean, you know, you could have done your research. You could have done your research. Can we move on to some Twitter questions from your fans?
Oh, yes. Oh, right? Lovely, yes.
Do you try to stay in touch with your fans or do you try to stay sort of aloof and mysterious to them?
No, I invite the fans
over for
round.
Drinks.
Yeah. No, most of them are living in my garden.
Right. Well, it's good to be able to keep an eye on them, know where they are
yeah.
at all times.
They get very frightened by the zebras.
Yes. Well, they would. There's a lot of them crammed into a very small space. You never know what is head and what is bum hole, as the old saying goes. With a zebra.
It's an old African saying.
When they're all crammed together, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying when there's just one standing there. I'd hope I'd be able to identify the difference.
This is true.
At Whoops Not Again says, how many cats is too many cats to push out to sea on a pedalo? It's an odd question.
One.
One is too many, isn't
one
it?
One is too
it's
many.
Far too many.
Go only with pushed
zero.
Out the one.
Yeah. I mean, maybe two is too many. Maybe you'd be curious with one.
I think one would be quite hard to justify.
I mean, I think the image would be beautiful, and therefore you are in a way creating art.
Port side, sir, this appears to be a pedalo with a cat on it.
Meow. Good. A lovely round of people who can do Mao. At the People's Princess writes, is chivalry dead?
Well, I still duel every
yes
every Tuesday.
I still hold women in the highest regard, but will not speak to them.
No, that's right.
Yes.
And that's as it should be.
And
that you try to bloody... You try to make one of these Labour Party candidates have that as part of their programme, they won't listen.
They won't listen. They won't listen. It's feudalism gone mad. I think that is all we've got time for, but all that's left for me to say is, Mark Steele, thank you for letting us inside you. Mark Steele. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Comedian with me, your host, David Reed. If you've enjoyed the show, then please help us spread the word by following @InsideComedian on Twitter.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.